You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
Got a call from the FBI that they're breaking out the windows. If somebody can advise what the cross streets are.
We've got looting at Thurmac in Michigan. Thurmac in Michigan, cash wraps, glass breaks, Nordstrom. Several people have broken in and they have run.
Attention shoppers, attention shoppers. It's 2 a.m. Luxury stores in Chicago on the Magnificent Mile are open for your shopping. Correct that. For your looting. August the 10th, 2020. This day began with chaos, anarchy, looting in downtown Chicago, heart of the tourist area, and shopping. Gangs breaking into stores, stealing what they could carry out, running back out to cars waiting in the streets for them. Chicago police were on the scene, but all they could do is basically stand back and watch, try to grab a few as they came running out. But there were so many of them rushing in. And Chicago police certainly didn't want to open fire and start shooting people just for looting. But yet, gunfire was reported at one point by one of the suspects firing at police, according to various reports. Police fired back. Apparently, no one hit in either case. Once the word got out that the Magnificent Mile, plate glass windows in all of those major luxury stores, and many smaller stores, boutiques, busted. People were running in to grab what they can. They were even taking the escalators, running up the escalator because it stopped. Were running up the escalator to stores of something in particular they wanted. And then having to walk back down the escalator because they weren't working to carry their loot outside. It all started in part because of a shooting yesterday afternoon. And some of those at the scene were complaining and saying that the police shot a kid. Of course, the facts they were putting out on the street were not correct. Police were involved in a shooting. Yes, they did shoot someone, and the Chicago police chief later said he's 20 years old with four felonies. But once the seed is planted, it supposedly gives justification for chaos, for looting. Breaking into those store windows had nothing to do with any complaints about police violence or need for police reform. The Chicago mayor made some statements today. And what she had to say, I've got some comments about it. I will tell you now, I'm going to be praising the Chicago mayor. That's right. I said I will be praising her for her remarks stated today, if she means what she says. We'll get more of that in the second hour as well. And what do you think about the lawsuit for the rioters? Remember that story? It's still in play to have taxpayers pay for masks and shields so rioters will have better protection against police, saying we can't exercise our First Amendment right, as if they think rioting is First Amendment, unless we get proper protection, and we can't afford it. One university professor agrees and says, what would be the next step, to charge folks to vote? Of course, that's a far step from reality, but the left is not dealing in reality. Attorney General Bill Barr pointing out in an interview with Mark Levin that most on the left are cowards. He'll explain why. President Trump issues an executive order, and now Dems are absolutely lost as to what to do. He pulled the rug out from under them, went ahead and is sending money to Americans who are in need of stimulus funds, while the Democrats are trying to shove through a $3 trillion bill. And there's a lot of confusion over the COVID-19 numbers. How do we know what is fact? What is fiction? I've got a guest coming up later today that helped publish a piece of the Daily Signal that might answer. And it also exposes some of the very lies that have been put in front of you. So if you're confused about the COVID-19 numbers, it's clearly understandable. Also, where's Vice President Biden? I say Vice President Biden formally, and where is he in his search for his vice president? We'll get into that. And also, Biden and others on the left make another remark about the shooting of Michael Brown in Ferguson, tweeting out, making remarks that suggest Brown was murdered by police in cold blood. We got a lot to say about it. A lot to come up the next 2 hours. Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
So are you ready to get out from the COVID-19 scare? We might still need to be careful in some areas. I do encourage businesses to make sure your facility is clear of COVID-19. And of course, if you open up and then a client or an employee or someone else surfaces with COVID-19, you need to reevaluate what's going on. I would encourage you to contact Wellington Environmental. They can determine at a very reasonable cost what you need to do before you open, once you are open, and as you move forward. It just makes good sense, doesn't it? Wellington Environmental, for 30 years, has been treating situations at hospitals, schools, daycare centers, private homes. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Wellington Environmental. Be well with Wellington Environmental. This segment of Larry Connors USA is brought to you by my friends at John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest prices. John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
There's no place to hide down here. No place to hide down here. Went to the rock, got on my knees. I heard the angels weep for me. No place to hide down here.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Those who engage in this criminal behavior, let's be clear. We are coming for you. We are already at work in finding you, and we intend to hold you accountable for your actions. I don't care. I do not care whatever justification was given for this. There is no justification for criminal behavior.
Those are the words, and very strong words at that, from the Chicago Mayor Lightfoot, issuing a warning to all those who were looting the downtown stores along the Magnificent Mile in Chicago overnight. We are coming for you. She said these individuals engaged in what can only be described as brazen, extensive criminal looting and destruction. And she added, to be clear, this had nothing to do with legitimate, protected First Amendment expression. That is the first time I've heard any member of the left make such strong remarks following a night of looting and other crimes, maybe including arson and attacking police, which also took place in Chicago last night. The only thing they did not do is start fires in some of those stores. But they did break into numerous stores, plate glass windows shattered all over, up and down the Magnificent Mile and in some of the big shopping scene areas that you find in Chicago. All because they felt they had some justification. Some justification. Because of an incident which happened over the weekend where police were again facing a large crowd that had been gathered on false premises of what the police were doing. Lies being told, basically, of what police were doing, and that police had overstepped their power and had caused violence unnecessarily. As I said, the police chief later today said The fact is, we were there to bring peace and order after there's already problems in the area. But nowadays, no one bothers to check the facts. They're looking for an excuse to go and do whatever they choose. And they will put it under the banner of First Amendment rights, which again, it has nothing to do with First Amendment rights, looting stores, attacking police, and or deciding that they were going to go and do what they want simply because it could. And they did not expect that anyone would really fight back. And again, the police in downtown Chicago last night, vastly outnumbered. They tried to grab a few of the folks looting and running out, but were unable to. They did the best they could under the circumstances, but it wasn't enough, and they couldn't really do anything about it. So they had this widespread looting. A lot of it caught on video, and the police chief said that they've already arrested 100 based on some of that video. And they expect to arrest more. And not just on looting, but some will be accused of attacking police. At least a dozen officers were hurt overnight. One officer, sergeant, got hit right in the face with a bottle. And another one trying to grab some of the looters also beat on. And a security guard and a civilian are also apparently in critical condition in a local hospital. They were hit by some of that gunfire during the looting overnight. As I said earlier, police were not hit, and nor were any of the looters, but a security guard and a civilian that apparently had nothing to do with the looting was also hit by the gunfire. And again, all of it began yesterday afternoon as police responded to a report that a man with a gun in the city's Inglewood neighborhood. Police are checking out a report of a guy with a gun. And as he is being pursued by police, he turned and fired at officers before being struck himself, and at last report, still in a hospital. So then you have a crowd gathering, and they faced off against police. They started throwing objects at police, and all of it because one report said this was a child that they had shot. But again, the chief clarified today, it was a 20-year-old previously arrested for 4 felonies, including burglary, child endangerment, domestic battery. But they had others gathering at the scene, agitating, encouraging, we got to do something. And from there, it escalated to looting in downtown Chicago. Again, the words of Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot.
We are waking up in shock this morning. In early morning hours of today, dozens of individuals came to our Loop, Mag Mile, River North, and Gold Coast neighborhoods, as well as a commercial district around North and Clydeway. These individuals engaged in what can only be described as brazen and extensive criminal looting and destruction. And to be clear, this had nothing to do with legitimate, protected First Amendment expression.
And again, I will tell you, that is the first time I've heard any major Democrat politician make such remarks. They had the opportunity in the hearing the other day, as they had A.G. Barr in front of them. Some of the Dems on the panel certainly could have praised him for at least trying to hold the country together in the midst of all this. Of course, they're not going to. They certainly could have expressed some concern and maybe even a little frustration, if not at least anger, about the rioting taking place in Portland, Seattle, elsewhere across the nation. But they don't say anything. They sit on their big behinds in their Senate chairs and lord over everyone below them and give no thought to what's fact and what's fiction, nor to what is justice and what is a crime. Not one of them. And that is, in fact, partly why Attorney General Barr called them cowards. Cowards. I'll let you hear more from the Attorney General in the next hour. I'm looking at a piece, though, that has come out, referenced Chicago. Now, this was an interesting piece. It was actually published back in June. This is before all this issue we've been having erupt. And it began in part in this article that was written by Steve Cordes, appearing in Real Clear Politics, in part referencing the now indicted Jussie Smollett, who claimed that Donald Trump partisans attacked him late at night on that deserted Chicago street January 2019. And, of course, the mainstream media quickly and gleefully jumped upon the fact that Trump supporters must have attacked the guy. And eventually the evidence came out that it was a total, total lie. But Smollett's story that his assailants were screaming, "This is MAGA country," made the mainstream media believe there has to be truth to it. MAGA country, according to this article, you would find in the deep blue Chicago city? Not likely. That should have been their first question, that this is not possibly real. But at that time, the mainstream media was not interested in the facts. They liked the sizzle that might burn Donald Trump. And the article goes on to talk about the various acts of violence that are occurring in Chicago, and refers to a piece written during the height of some of the recent protests and looting, previous to the one that happened last night, May 31st, where it says Chicago suffered the deadliest single day in its modern history, 18 people murdered. Chicago Sun-Times covered that date. It's calling it Bloody Sunday. And, of course, many will say the violence flows from a lack of opportunity that drives too many young men to lives of despair, danger, and criminality, and points out a recent University of Illinois study reporting 40% of Chicago black men aged 20 through 24 were neither employed nor in school. 40%. And, of course, the public education in Chicago has not been effective. According to the 2019 school year evaluation based on Illinois exam guidelines, only 26% of Chicago public school students tested to be ready for the next grade level. That's a failing inside the school system. But unfortunately, what happens, they probably are passed on to the next level even though they're not prepared. And they come out with a degree that's worthless if they get one. But when you got 40% of them, of those ages 20 to 24, that are either not in school nor employed, then what do you expect they're going to do? They're going to be on the streets gangbanging. The story in Chicago is that much is in some ways radically different than what we have in Portland, Seattle. And yet it is the same when we start looking at the violence that is breaking out for any reasons. And, of course, in Portland, the Seattle area, they had more rioting over the weekend and again last night. In Portland, they had a riot that again took place, this time around a Portland Police Association building, demonstrators breaking in, setting fire to it. They did that late Saturday. And again, there was more violence last night. And then you've got the story I pointed out to you the other day. That you hear this story and you think, that can't be real. Yes, it is. A lawsuit filed by Seattle protesters who claim we had to pay for buying expensive anti-police protective gear and money we had spent on that to make sure we're safe during our First Amendment exercise is prohibitive, so we need taxpayers to pay for our riot protection gear. You, my friend, are supposed to be paying so they can get in the streets, not exercise First Amendment marching, peaceful assembly, but for rioting. And, of course, they have those who quickly step up and agree with them. And many in the world of academia, an attorney, law professor, Northwestern University, Andrew Stoltman, he says, This is serious. This is a serious concern.
You can't charge people and make people have to buy expensive stuff in order to protest. There are very important First Amendment issues here. It kind of becomes a slippery slope. You know, what's next? Are we going to say people have to spend $200 or $300 before they vote? And I know it's kind of easy to laugh at these crazy people in Seattle and Portland.
All right. Let's do it. Yeah, let's stop and laugh right there. Yes, it's easy to laugh at these crazy people in Seattle or Portland demanding that we pay for their riot gear. If they're simply marching and protesting, and it's a peaceful assembly, police are not disturbing them. But again, listen to the professor.
There are very important First Amendment issues here. It kind of becomes a slippery slope. You know, what's next? Are we going to say people have to spend $200 or $300 before they vote? And I know it's kind of easy to laugh at these crazy people in Seattle and Portland, but, you know, they have a right to protest. They are angry, and you cannot put various burdens on them and saying you have to do this or you have to pay $200 in order to protest.
And I got to remind you, that is a law professor, a practicing attorney, but a law professor at Northwestern University. Now, I don't see him shelling out and writing checks to the rioters to go buy their helmets and shields. But he expects you to. So the Democrats were sure that they had President Trump in a vice going into the election because they were going to hold off on this latest stimulus package. And then the president said, give me a pen. I'll take care of this.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
One, two, three, they're going to run back. Me. They always want to come, but they never want to leave.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
So we had coming up at the end of let me see the exact date. I can't pull it up here in front of it. But basically, you had the money coming to an end that was going to help. Actually, it had expired at the end of July. That was the exact date. The money folks were getting on their stimulus bill, $600 a week, to help them in the midst of this pandemic, that they've lost their jobs, businesses had to shut down. And, of course, we've had additional battling going back and forth between the Democrats and Republicans. How best to get money back to the people who do desperately need it. The concern among the Republicans is the $600 a week, that's basically giving them no incentive to actually go back to work. They were making more money to sit home, which meant some of the businesses couldn't open because they couldn't get employees to come back. And, of course, you have the Democrats pushing a $3 trillion bill, which had more Green Deal wishes in it. So while the two parties were locked down, President Trump decided, I'll take care of it. He ended up signing an executive order, four executive actions over the weekend, providing Americans financial relief from this ongoing pandemic. When it comes to supplemental unemployment aid, his program calls for $400 per week. Now, that's not the $600 that they were getting, but it's better than nothing. And it would also require states to pay for 25% of that $400 weekly benefit. And, of course, the blue state governors, Andrew Cuomo and others, immediately crying foul. We're already hurting and suffering, and now we got to pay 25% to help the citizens. Did you just hear what you said, Cuomo? You don't think your state should be helping them? And the president also signed executive actions encouraging federal efforts to help renters and homeowners avoid eviction or foreclosure for failing to make monthly payments, to defer the payroll tax from September 1 to December 31, 2020, for employees making $100,000 or less a year, and also to suspend federal student loan payments and set interest rates to 0% through December this year. Now, that current student loan relief program was set to expire on September 30th. And here came the Democrats trying, well, how do we fight against this? Well, Schumer first out said, this is laughable. He has no respect for the American people. saying we came up with a strong plan and we're willing to do more because we want to get it done. Said we said we would cut a deal. And weekend, and also Nancy Pelosi, I should say, over the weekend, slamming the president's executive actions as an illusion. You're going to tell that to the people who will at least get some money back in their pockets? Now, granted, many Republicans still don't like the idea of even $600 a week because they think it still comes close to providing no incentive. I mean, $400 a week, that it continues to provide no incentive for many to go to work, and it continues to mean that many who own apartments and are landlords are not going to get their money because the folks are going to continue to hold back if you have denied early evictions. There's a lot to argue over, but it gets down to trying to help Americans when we need it right now. And it has basically taken a very big weapon out of the Democrats' hands, which they were planning to use to beat the American people down more, to make you suffer more, so when you go to the polls in November, you would pull for the Democrat lever. Not likely to happen. So the truth and falsehoods of the COVID numbers coming up.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
Number. Oh, and I know that you got mine. You know that I called you. I called too many times. You can call me, baby. You can call me anytime. You got to call me.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
If you were confused about how many actual COVID cases we have in this nation, it's fully understandable. Some reports up to 5 million confirmed COVID cases, supposedly confirmed by testing. And there are a lot of questions about that. And the death count, we still don't know how many are actual COVID-related and or did they die of COVID or with COVID. And the numbers continue to rock. And in some cases, numbers are suddenly dumped all on one day, so it looks like a big spike, when actually it was 2 or 3 days of material gathered. How do you sort it out? What do you know? What's true? What's fact? What's fiction? Welcome to the program, Doug Badger. He wrote an article along with Amy Anderson for the Daily Signal. Doug, welcome aboard.
Thank you, Larry. Good to talk with you.
Well, let's begin with your view on, first of all, how misleading is everything the public is getting at this point?
Well, as you mentioned, Amy and I wrote an article. Amy's a professor of nursing at Texas Christian University. I'm with the Heritage Foundation. We saw this headline, 9 out of 10 U.S. coronavirus hotspots are in Florida and Texas. And, of course, Florida and Texas are expected to be contested in the upcoming election. Both have Republican governors, and the press always refers to the Florida governor, Ron DeSantis, as a Trump ally. And they're making this case that here are these irresponsible Trump allies, and now their states are just lighting up with all of these COVID cases. Well, I live in Florida, Larry, and I follow those numbers very closely, and I'm thinking, wow, 9 out of 10. Let's take a look at this. Now, this is a document produced by the Centers for the Disease Control. It was leaked to the press. CDC didn't release it.
Oh, now, when you say leaked, let me clarify. When you say leaked, you're suggesting it was yeah, let me slip this to you. We're going to leak it. And it wasn't really leaked. It was planned to release it.
Well, I put it this way. They never formally, CDC never formally released it, but somehow it found its way to a reporter and made it into the press.
Okay.
That Florida is not, and Texas are 9 out of 10. So
right.
I took a look. The number one hotspot in America. Now, we've heard a lot. There have been a lot of cases in Miami. Absolutely true. Houston's had a lot of cases. But the number one hotspot in America, according to this leaked CDC document, is Columbia County, Florida. Now, I live in Florida. I don't even know where Columbia County is.
I don't either. That's not
look
my,
it up. First of all, they don't even have 100,000 people. It's about 70,000 people. There's a town there called Lake City that used to be named Alligator, Florida, and then the mayor's wife hated the name, so they changed it to Lake City. And, they've had 10 deaths there. It doesn't sound like a hot spot to me. What happened? Well, there's the Columbia Correctional Institution, a prison. And on 2 days, in this 14-day period, a number of the inmates tested positive for the COVID virus. And so suddenly Columbia County, Florida, is the number one coronavirus hotspot in the country. And it just shows you how our people who are in charge of
total distortion, public health total distortion, total distortion, total manipulation, totally weaponizing and not giving us facts that really mean anything. If 54% of the one you just told me are in that prison unit of those COVID-19 cases, the public at large is not at all that much at risk compared to what we have in Columbia County.
No, right? Certainly not. Not in Lake City, Florida.
Right.
As I walked through some of the other Florida counties, I came across another that 67% of the cases were in a prison. Now, again, I don't dismiss this. I mean, prisoners are getting sick. I mean, they're being punished for committing a crime. They shouldn't be exposed to illness, and we should be doing a good job, a better job of protecting their health. But, that's not an outbreak in the community that's putting anybody at risk.
Well, it looks to me like the Florida governor, ally of Trump, obviously is responsible for this.
Yeah, well, that's the idea. And the same thing with the Texas governor, Governor Abbott, another Republican. And, of course, Texas is a state that Democrats believe they can compete in this year.
Well, what was the hot spot in Texas? What was one of the hot spots?
Well, we found a little town. Amy found this because Amy, as I said, is a professor at Texas Christian University, so she took a look at some of the Texas counties. So he found this little county with 7,000 residents, and it turns out that they set up a free testing facility there one day and ran a few hundred tests. And, of course, people came not just from the county but from elsewhere to go get their free COVID test. And those all got reported on one day, as you suggested. And all of a sudden, here we are, another COVID-19 hotspot, partly because even though the county itself has reported very few cases, they suddenly got a glut of cases on that particular day because of the free testing site.
And the other part of this is that even if they are properly tested and properly identified that they're COVID-19, their symptoms, they may not even show any symptoms. Their illness may be very short and brief, if at all. In other words, it just gives us a number of who was supposedly proven to have COVID-19. And then we get to the death numbers. And the death numbers have also been vacillating. And when you start looking at how much hospitals are paid for treating COVID patients and are putting them on ventilators and are some of the COVID-19 deaths, are they contributed to COVID, or they had COVID when they died?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at this, half of all COVID deaths are occurring among nursing home residents. And that really is a national disgrace that we're not doing a better job of protecting our elderly, and it's something that's occurring not only in the United States but elsewhere. The New York Times had a big piece.
I'm going to have to correct you. Doug, I'm sorry. I've got to correct you. Mayor Cuomo said they've done things right in New York and Connecticut and New Jersey. It's Trump that's messed up the rest of it.
Well, yeah. I'm sure that's right. By the way, Florida and Texas, in terms of death per 100,000 population, are below the national average. New York and New Jersey and Connecticut are running at about four times the national average. So I'm not sure they did that good a job, we have, again, half these deaths in nursing homes, and these are people, when we talk about nursing home residents and prisoners, these guys are literally on lockdown.
Yeah, yeah.
So the lockdown orders don't have anything to do with their health, and the reality is, as you say, many of our nursing home residents are frail elderly. They have multiple illnesses. Many of them have advanced directives, so they don't want to be put on ventilators. They make that decision long before they actually get sick. And so, you know, the COVID virus does not present the same risk to a child, a young adult, even a middle-aged adult, as it does to an elderly person, particularly one that has some underlying chronic conditions.
You know, there's an interesting, quote, experiment underway right now, and I know some friends participating in it. In fact, if I had not had so many obligations with this radio program, I would have gone. That's the Sturgis, the motorcycle rally. And several of my Harley-Davidson riders, friends, have rode up there over the last couple of days, and they were expecting normally about 500,000 in Sturgis during that period of time in South Dakota. The South Dakota governor had said, I welcome them, not going to require masks, would like you to maintain best you want to in your own decision of what you need to do when you're here, but the economy has been so hard hit, it's going to be a benefit to them. And a lot of folks are waiting to see that, well, in a couple of weeks from now, it won't break out in Sturgis, obviously, because they'll all go back to their homes, wherever they came from across the nation. Then we will see a massive spike in various places traced back to Sturgis. Have you began to look at some of the cases where you might see something like that happen, or do you know if that's a possibility?
There have been some studies. For example, President Trump did a rally a month or so ago in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and there was a study.
And he did one in South Dakota. Done. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and it showed that there was not an outbreak following that. I know there was a lot of hand-wringing in the press that this was occurring, and it really didn't eventuate from that. With Sturgis, I don't know what's going to happen, but it is something that I'm sure they'll be paying very close attention to.
Well, you know, some of the folks I know that went, they've already had COVID. They were diagnosed with COVID, and a couple of them got sick for 3 or 4 days. They're well. And others say, well, you know, I just don't believe the numbers because we've been lied to and so many false numbers out there. In the last 30 seconds, how do you advise us to take these numbers as we see them being released over the days to come?
Well, unfortunately, you need to take them with a grain of salt. I would say if you're thinking about your own community, I would be keeping an eye on how many elderly people are being infected, because that is a big deal. People over 65 and so forth, if they get it, this can be a very, very serious and even a fatal illness.
All right.
Much more likely for them than for younger people.
All right, Doug.
And the second thing to look at is hospital capacity. If your hospital, does your hospital have ICU beds and acute care beds to accommodate a surge in patients?
All right.
But I wouldn't pay attention to these, we have 5 million cases or whatever.
Doug, I'm going to let you go. I'm going to let you go. Thank you very much. And again, those are wise words we carry with us. Thank you very much. Doug Badger with the Heritage Foundation. And we'll
talk.
Thank you very much, Doug. We'll talk a little bit more about the COVID coming up.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
So this is the 80th annual Sturgis Motorcycle Rally in Sturgis, South Dakota, and the areas around it. Normally up to half a million bikers are in the Sturgis area during that 10 days. I've been up there maybe 3 or 4 times. I know some riders who went up this time. They're expecting maybe half that number because of COVID. But some of the ones I know going, they've either had COVID or they're not worried about it. And in fact, you look at some of the T-shirts being sold in Sturgis right now. Screw COVID, I went to Sturgis. And then you've got an Arizona resident being quoted, 66 years old, who rode his bike up and said, I don't want to die, but I don't want to be cooped up all my life either. So they're making their own decisions. The governor of South Dakota said we welcome them, like them to use some cautions, but welcome to Sturgis. And of course, the economy is hard hit. It will help them considerably. Which brings us to a point that there have been apparently some tribal groups that said they would be blocking bikers heading to South Dakota if they're passing through some of the Cheyenne River Sioux checkpoints. The seven tribes making up the Sioux Nation are involved in that, but federal and state agents say those checkpoints are illegal. I think they need to consider, because the money that's coming in by these bikers is going to help a lot of those same Indian tribes who have various facilities and businesses around the area that they will benefit. We will see if it turns out to be a hot spot, but of course it won't happen in Sturgis. It'll be a week, 2 weeks down the road where we see cases pop up, and folks will say they were at Sturgis or they weren't. And then, of course, we have Vice President Biden still doing anything he can to pander to get the votes he needs. He tweeted out over the weekend, reference Sunday was the sixth anniversary of the Michael Brown case. Michael Brown shot to death by a police officer in Ferguson. But Biden on his tweet said, it's been 6 years since Michael Brown's life was taken in Ferguson, reigniting a movement. We must continue the work of tackling systemic racism and reform policing. Those words that Michael Brown's life was taken suggest the officer, Darren Wilson, shot him in cold blood. And, of course, that's where the hands up, don't shoot slogan began, which is a false narrative, a flat-out lie, but you had mainstream media carrying it and repeating it, and it began to echo across the nation. The local prosecutor carried out an investigation, said there's no reason, nothing we can indict him on. And the Obama-Biden administration, sent in Eric Holder, the Department of Justice, to look to see if there's any way we can go after the officer on violation of civil rights of killing Michael Brown. The investigation at the federal level ruled that Brown had indeed attacked the officer who was sitting in his patrol car, reaching into the car, trying to grab the officer's gun. And in the struggle, part of Brown's thumb was shot off. Brown ran away. Officer Wilson pursued him and then fired only when Brown charged at him. And here in the words of the Department of Justice report, the autopsy results confirm that Wilson did not shoot Brown in the back as he was running away, because there were no entrance wounds to Brown's back. And several witnesses stated that Brown appeared to pose a physical threat to Wilson as he moved forward. That's the Department of Justice report. Do you not imagine if Eric Holder could have found anything to turn that into a case, they would? And then, of course, a newly elected prosecutor, St. Louis County, gets the other one thrown out based on the fact that he apparently, in the minds of many of the community, did not properly go after the officer. So the new county prosecutor just the other day said, after a five-month investigation, we have no way to charge the officer. In other words, no grounds for any charge whatsoever. But then added, if the officer had acted differently, Michael Brown might have still been alive. That's just throwing fuel into the fire. You do know that. The embers are just about to go out, but when you throw that in there, you reignite it. Even Senator Kamala Harris, Democrat of California, who wants to be on the VP ticket, has been a prosecutor at state and local level in California, has made similar claims suggesting that Michael Brown was gunned down by a police officer intent on killing him just because he was black. There are cases where officers are out of line and violating not only the rules and conduct, but laws, and they should be held accountable. But in this case, after you have a local prosecution decide we can't do anything, and the feds are right behind them picking everything up, see if they can make a case because they darn sure wanted to, and they had to walk away and say there's nothing here, and a third effort by a prosecutor who had replaced the other decided we've got nothing we can charge him on, you think they would get the story right. But nope, here comes a former Vice President Joe Biden pandering for votes, talking about how Michael Brown's life was taken in Ferguson. Where does Biden stand on a VP selection? We'll get into that in the next hour. And also, back to Chicago and a night of chaos and violence. And believe it or not, I have words of praise for the Chicago mayor. I know it's rare, but I always try to be balanced and fair, and I call things the way I see them. And I have that part of the story along with the rest of the Chicago violence story and everything else that's going wrong up in Chicago and other areas when we continue. Please stand by.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.